Hey folks, Zach Osborne here, IU Insider Indianapolis Star. It is Friday, April 12th. This is Mind Your Banners. Sorry it's been a long layoff. Forgive me, I was off work for a couple weeks because of some family stuff, but we're back and the portal is back and Mike Nislick of the Bloomington Herald Times is back. And Mike, it's a busy time. We've got six more days of spring football. We'll talk about the portal in a minute, but my first question for you is, how are you feeling on this Friday afternoon? Are you the Friday late morning? Are you the old Indiana or are you the new Indy?
Oh man, I don't know. It's a tough one. Yeah, no, I mean, what were you fans were dismayed. Some fans were dismayed at he was taking shots, but I don't think he's been shy about that. Like, I don't think that was the first time he's done it. And I don't think that it's malicious. Do you?
I know. I mean, it reminds me of Kevin. Like, the funny thing is, Indiana's kind of not had a truly new head coach in 13 years. So, like, I think there's an extent to which, like, people just kind of forget, like, yes, the change coaches 7 years ago, but that didn't feel like this because it was an in-house promotion. You know, it was from the current staff. And so there was a real level of continuity of sort of like almost like the narrative arc of the program from 2016 to 2017. I mean, Kevin Wilson said stuff that was way more blunt and, you know, angry, frankly, than Kurt Cignetti has. And Wilson, you know, you think about Wilson turned over the roster probably just as much as Cignetti. The difference is Cignetti kind of had to, because that's just the climate around the portal and recruiting and how everything works now. Like, I mean, Kevin Wilson had starters quitting the team midseason. I mean, that's literally what happened. Because guys, you know, there was just such a disconnect between what the staff felt like it inherited and what it felt like it needed, both personnel wise and also maybe mentality wise. So, I mean, you know, particularly when Kurt Cignetti is the kind of person that gets on a microphone at a basketball game and says Purdue sucks, but so does Michigan and Ohio State. Like, you don't get that person and also not get a coach who's going to be blunt in his assessment of things when it's not going, you know, according to kind of his plan, or when it's not meeting his standard. Like, it's just, I think this is just kind of normal, especially for year one.
Yeah. And I mean, I just found it funny. It was about the clips. Day off was what, you know, I just don't think he was happy that they had to take a day off for the eclipse. Essentially, like that bothered him. I think that was like the source of his frustration.
It has been obviously not the most revelatory spring. Indiana has kept its practice access a lot more limited than in past years. It's fair to say there have been moments when Cignetti has been willing to maybe expand a little bit on certain things, and moments when he hasn't. And it has always amused me. Like, I enjoyed his answer about the quarterback battle. He said, I probably won't give you much. I don't really have much to add. I probably won't give you much going forward. And then he just goes, but I will say Curtis Rourke's looking good. Like, it's like, and coaches do this a lot where they're like, I'm not going to do that, but I will do that briefly, yeah. But I will do that. Like when Mike Woodson got into it with Fran McCaffrey a couple years ago, and then somebody asked him about it after, and he goes, I'm not going to talk about that. And then he proceeded to talk about it for like 5 minutes and swear and criticize everyone. And it was fantastic. Anyway, the point is, where are you in terms of, I guess, your comfort level? I don't say comfort level, your confidence level with kind of, whether you see it as position by position or offense, defense, like just where are you with less than a week left in this spring season, feeling like your confidence is with just kind of what to think of or expect from this team?
Oh, I mean, what to expect? I have no idea. I mean, I could tell you what I think the two deep is going to look like with, I don't know, maybe 80% confidence. But like what that all looks like in terms of like how it all comes together, I have no idea. I mean, just because we haven't really seen a single play run at full speed. So, I mean, like, you know, that's, I think, part of the difficult challenge, especially when you know, close practice and you don't allow a lot to talk to the assistants. I think it's just tough to know kind of how it's all going to come together, like what their confidence, it's hard to say, but I mean, I just feel like I think we have a good idea of what the lineup's going to look like as of right now, because I think the portal will be busy again, and I don't think Kurt Cignetti's been shy. I don't think any coach has been shy just about how much movement there's going to be, maybe more than ever in terms of this next window. So I think I could put together two deep right now, but how many play, what that looks like in a couple of weeks, I guess we'll find out.
Let's talk about positions that I think probably won't be heavily impacted by what happens, at least maybe what Indiana wants to happen in the portal, chiefly quarterback. I think it's probably fair to say at this point, the hierarchy is kind of Curtis Rourke one, Taven Jackson two, Tyler Cherry three, with maybe an eye on, more of kind of the like sort of short term Taven Jackson is the clear number two. Long term, the staff's mind is still pretty open between Cherry and Jackson, but if Rourke is the number one and he had to miss a month of the season right now, I think Taven Jackson would probably be ahead of Tyler Cherry as much as maybe as on experience, and time on task at the college level. I mean, is that how you read it?
Yeah, I mean, like if Curtis Rourke walked out on day one and tore his ACL, he's out for the season, then you probably build around Cherry. But if it's there's you need to get through 4 weeks and you're trying to be competitive, Taven's probably your guy, like as a stopgap. I do think that they'll leave the door open for Cherry to, like, if he has an incredible summer and comes back guns a blazing, maybe that could change a little bit. But I do think that they're going to allow. They don't need to rush him. That was the whole point of getting Rourke in the first place, that you have this guy with 3 years of experience. You can lean on him, and if he's healthy, he's going to be the guy. And so you don't have to sort of throw a true freshman in there unless he's sort of this transcendent talent that Kurt Cignetti's kind of talked about before.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's, I sort of feel like basically there's almost an extent to which that you can overlay something similar on wide receiver. And I'm fascinated by the wide receiver group, one, because Indiana's highest profile retention was at wide receiver, two, because, based on the way Kurt Cignetti has talked in general, some stuff he said to me during our sit down, some stuff I think he said to you during your sit down, seems like there's going to be a lot more interest in four wide sets than, Tom Allen's offenses, whether it was Kalen DeBoer, Nick Sheridan, Walt Bell, Mike DeBoer, they were always spread offenses, but there was always room for a tight end or an H-back type player, maybe an offset tight end. Looking at some of James Madison's film the last couple of years, listening to Kurt Cignetti, and then looking at, frankly, the way that he's recruited, in terms of just the quantity of wide receivers they either pulled out of the portal, Donovan McCulley, or went and got in the portal, like a Miles Cross, Miles Price, Keyshawn Williams. It seems like it's kind of something similar. Obviously, not apples to apples as positions, but kind of this idea that we go get some really experienced guys that can, may only have a year or two left, but they can be a bridge for us while we develop whatever's behind them, because this is a position we're going to rely heavily on in the offense.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit it. They're going to spread out a lot. I don't think there's any question. I think they're going to try to use as many of the skilled players as they got, because they emphasized it like crazy in the portal. Like they signed eight skilled players, four at each position in terms of running back and wide receiver. I think you're looking at Surratt, Price, and sort of McCulley, sort of that starting three. And then EJ Williams has kind of been slowed by injuries. If he can get healthy, he's kind of in that next group. But that top three is pretty good. Miles Price.
I forgot about Surratt. That is certainly a more long-term, he's got more than 1 year, so.
And in Price, you got a guy that's done it, not maybe not sort of had sort of the 1,000-yard breakout season, but he's been consistent enough, led Texas Tech in catches last year. He's had like 500 yards, I think, all 4 years, or 400 all 4 years he's been in college. So that's a pretty dynamic group. And I think he's been pretty he as in Kurt Cignetti, he's been pretty if there's anything that he's said this spring, there's not much. He likes the receiver group. I mean, if you're going to take one takeaway from the spring, he likes his receivers.
He also, I would say he, at least as much as he's kind of ever willing, and there's coaches where like, there's all manner of coaches, and I think he is one of those where anytime he's willing to praise something, like no matter how tepid his praise, it probably means it's going well because he just isn't prone to be very,
Well, you want to,
satisfied.
here's a funny story. So I haven't read this up yet. I got a chance to talk to Zach Horton yesterday, the JMU tight end that came over. And I was asking him because they last year, after the first six games, Cignetti, I don't know if it was a press conference or one-on-one interview, he's like, Zach Horton is playing as well as like anybody on the team. He's just been a fantastic, he's done a just really fantastic job and just done so well. And I guess Zach Horton heard from it. Like his parents were like, "Did you see this? Do you see this?" And he's like, he said, "What? That doesn't sound like him. Like, let me check if this is real or not." Like it was too, it was the praise was too over the top. So yeah, not one to heap praise on players. He like
Had a
the
coach like
praise
that in high
was
school
like,
though, who
"What?"
like who just never relented on me my sophomore year, and then my junior year, we're like sitting down at practice one day, and I'll use some colorful language, but we'd had a bad practice, and we're all sitting there, and he goes, "Guys." He was an old wrestling coach, so he had a real gravelly voice. He goes, "If I was Zach, I'd be fucking pissed at the rest of you right now." And I'm like looking around. I'm like, "What is there? Like, this? Do we get a new player on the team named Zach?" He's like, "Cause he all he does is come out here and work his ass off." And I'm like, "What? What? This is thanks, I guess, but it's just like there's coaches like that where it's like if any sliver of praise they dole out probably means like someone looked like Keyshawn Johnson at practice that day because he just like, but I bring that up because he said a couple things, not least on Tuesday, about the offensive line that I think have been quietly encouraging. And I mean, this stuff's all it's all spring. It's the first spring under a new staff and stuff. I've heard Carter Smith looks good. I've heard Mike Kadick looks good. Obviously, they got a couple guys there that are injured that are sitting out the spring, but'll be ready for fall. I think there have been as many questions, maybe at least to an extent, about kind of who comes up behind that first five. You've got Smith, Kadick, Wettig, the Wisconsin transfer, and then the two transfers from JMU. It's almost kind of a question of, who's the depth that fills in behind them? Is it a Bray Lynch? Is it an Austin Barrett? Is it somebody else? But actually, hearing Cignetti even maybe not wanting to hand out too much praise, but still giving a positive assessment of the offensive line might be the biggest piece of sort of positive news I would kind of put on the table for IU fans this spring, because that has been ultimately just the Achilles heel that as much as anything offensively kind of dragged Tom Allen's tenure down where it wound up.
Well, I would say the quarterbacks kind of dragged him down more so than the
Well,
offense.
but I it all started with an offensive line that just could not consistently block enough to keep the offense on schedule.
That, but yeah, last year though they were okay.
That's fair. They were a little bit better last year,
I
had a
guess
couple
I mean I
injuries.
know the year before that. I mean I wasn't here so, but I've been told not just by you that it was like a disaster, like
It was pretty bad.
Hindenburg level disaster offensive line, but. Yeah, you mentioned the starter group. Stevens and Kidwell were the guys that Kidwell's out this spring. Stevens has been there. I in terms of the offensive line, though, I think one good thing about some of the injuries is that you've gotten more reps for some of the backup guys because, like you said, the depth wise, they're not there yet. Boltikoff, who's a transfer that didn't play much last year. He was on TCU. He's been hurt this spring too, but he's kind of a versatile guy in the interior. Lynch has been kind of moving around center guard. He's probably a key piece kind of in terms of depth. And like you said, Barrett and Jones are kind of the tackles that they've been using sort of from what we've seen kind of backup guys. But it's a good first group, but once you start getting to that second group, it gets things are dicey. And so 2 years ago, first game, suffer huge injuries and injuries piled up throughout the season. Last year, they stayed really relatively healthy. Carter Smith started all the games, Kadick too. So it's a group that I think if stays healthy, could be pretty good. But I think it's one of the positions, probably the only position on offense where you're thinking, man, injuries could really play a huge role in sort of derailing things for the team.
Defensively is where obviously it gets a lot more kind of complicated for Indiana. That's where they've been hit both with, some losses when you look at like an Aaron Casey. That I know you wrote about linebacker recently. They moved Jacob Mangum-Ferrar to defensive line, so they've kind of had to remake the top end of that group with a combination of, transfers and maybe some younger guys stepping up. The defensive line has just been, I mean, you talk about a position where Indiana's going to have to go find some help in the portal after the spring season. Obviously, they've had some injuries. James Carpenter, the transfer from James Madison, has been sitting out because of a surgery. So have Lenell Carr and Vincent Sneed, two players that the staff clearly thinks will have big roles to play next season. But the reality is there's not a lot of depth or experience, frankly, at those defensive line spots. And all it takes is two or three of your, maybe higher end guys being out, which, listen, that's happening because of these, sort of necessary offseason surgeries in the spring. But like, that's a perfectly reasonable scenario to face in week 7, just not having two or three good players at one position because of injury. That's just the nature of football. It doesn't take much to expose how shallow, in terms of at least proven experience or proven production, I should say, that defensive line has right now.
Yeah, and he's kind of talked about the secondary in terms of like, oh, they need another body. So I don't know if he's tried to like downplay the idea that this, especially at tackle, they've just got no bodies in terms of like scholarship players and sort of high-end talent, like outside of Carpenter, like, Marcus Burst did a couple of nice things, but he's always kind of rotated between the inside and outside. But like, I mean, they've been really just like, when they go 3 deep, sort of in the walkthroughs that we see, I mean, it's all walk-ons in terms of like, especially at tackle, defensive end, they're sort of moving pieces around. Kamara is kind of probably the guy with the highest ceiling right now at defensive end. Really don't know what to expect of Mangum-Ferrar. Athletic enough at linebacker, I think has some upside there, but in terms of like, our team's just going to be able to run all over this group is you'd be your concern. Are they going to be able to generate any kind of pass rush, especially in the middle? I think, like you said, if they had any NIL money left and there was a big name, defensive line would be sort of, I think, star, what they need to sort of, add a talent or, I mean, or just add depth and get a couple of guys. So like you said, you protect yourself against injuries, but across the defense, I think you could say if they suffer an injury or two at any of these positions, they're in some trouble. Just they don't have any depth. They went huge on the portal on the offense, and I get it because offensive minded staff, but they did neglect the defense a little bit. I feel like, and the defense wasn't stacked to begin with because they lost so much talent and didn't retain as much from Allen's staff from Allen's last year.
Conversely, the position group, I guess, and this is always kind of a blanket phrase, but that I'm more interested in on that defense is the secondary, because they had to remake it a little bit. But if you actually sit down, and maybe I'm in the minority on this, but I'd kind of had it in my head the secondary was in a similar spot to the line. And if you actually sit down, it's not necessarily. There's, Kobe Minor is back, Jameer Johnson, who I thought looked promising at least before obviously the injuries kind of caught up with him last year, is back. Sounds like Nick Toomer has moved back to safety. Josh Sanguinetti's back there. They took the two guys from Old Dominion. Then you do have some younger players, that you've got to look at, and especially at corner, maybe try and figure out where your depth comes from. And, we'll see kind of what they do when they want to, Tom Allen always called it the Husky, when they want to put one of those sort of hybrid safety linebacker or safety nickel corner type of roles on the field. We'll see how they handle that. We haven't seen enough of practice to really know how that works in Brian Haynes's defensive scheme. But that secondary actually is maybe at least got more tools than, maybe I don't know, maybe I had just was slow on the draw on this, but I looked at it and just thought that group's got more, at least more pieces than I expected it to. Not sure how they all fit together, but that there's a little bit more just like aggregate, opportunity there.
Yeah, I think they call it the. I think they call it. They've or historically called it Rover for that. That's extra spot they've used, in terms of like how they've lined up through walkthroughs. They've kind of used Jaden McDonald at times, who's more of a linebacker, outside linebacker, and they've used Terry Jones Jr. who was one of the Old Dominion safety transfers. And so that kind of plays into the idea of, like, how they rep that. It thins out your depth if they usually use that more as a safety role because they need more guys with safety experience or safety sort of skill set. Like you said, tumors kind of move to the back end. So corner, I think you're probably better off at corner than anywhere else. I just don't know. It wasn't a particularly good secondary last year is the problem. So I mean, like, you have experience, but, like, I mean, this team wasn't like locking teams down to begin with. Like, so yeah, they have more experience, like, but, like, ultimately, how what's the ceiling for this group? I'm not really sure. I mean, they allowed, I was just looking it up, 240, nearly 240 yards a game, passing yards per game, ranked 87th
And that's
in it.
gonna, and like that's also gonna be reliant on a better defensive front. I mean, like James Madison was so disruptive the last two seasons defensively in terms of, tackles for loss, sacks, quarterback pressures, things like that. Like, a secondary is always gonna be a little bit defined by just the chaos that the front ahead of it can create. And Indiana's got to kind of figure those two things out. What is I'll ask you a cliche before we wrap this up and move into just a little bit of portal talk before we finish. What do you like? What are you looking at most closely during the spring game? Recognizing it's a spring game, recognizing it's all a little bit controlled. I know you had a good, an interesting story yesterday about how Cignetti structures the spring games from a scoring perspective and all that. Are there one or two things that you're going to be looking at ahead of everything else, essentially, in that? That core.
It's just how the offense operates, I guess. What the running back, like, what the rotation looks like a little bit. Like, I mean, do they stick with the guy for a little bit? I mean, I don't know how much rotating they'll do. I mean, they're only playing two quarters, so it's like, do they let the sort of first team offense kind of roll for a little bit, and what that group looks like just at full speed, because I think that's gonna kind of really, that's where this team will succeed or fail, right? If they could score 35 points a game, they're probably in the realm of 6 wins, but other, if they're not, they're not going to get close. That's kind of how I view this team. Like, defensively, they're not going to be able to remake the defense in spring at all to sort of ride that group to any kind of success. They're just not. So, like, they're going to need to outscore 6 teams, 7 teams on the schedule. What about you?
No, I think I'm broadly the same place. I do think it will be more instructive that he's breaking it up offense defense rather than like trying to create two teams, because that will just give you a firmer sense of like these are the guys they have on this side of the ball, these are the roles that they fill. There will be less, well, hold on, it's he's over there. Does that mean he's with the ones or the twos? And all, I mean, I think that will at least be more instructive. I'm curious just about line play. I've always been curious about line play. That's what wins in the Big Ten, ultimately. And it's what wins most places, but it's certainly what wins in the Big Ten. And if Indiana, looks tangibly better on either side of the line, I think that's when you are allowed to maybe feel like, okay, at least one of these two units is going to be good enough, as you said, to win 6 or 7 games. And then maybe the question is like, how much more does the ceiling raise with the other one? And that might be defined a little bit by the portal and by what Indiana can go do there. Let's talk about the portal from a basketball perspective. Today begins a breakneck run of visitors. There are just a ton of players at least scheduled to come through. It's worth saying in the portal, all it takes is one guy committing someplace and suddenly a visit schedule completely changes. Visits get knocked off, visits get added, whatever. Right now, I would expect to see, some combination of Miles Rice, Kanan Carlisle, Connor Hickman, Umar Ballo, Farrell Payne, Amari Williams. I know I'm forgetting somebody. The point is, there is just a swath of pretty substantial portal targets, like notable transfers scheduled to come through Bloomington sometime between now and the end of Little Five weekend next weekend. And I think it's fair to say, one, that the mood music is would suggest Indiana is going to pick up at least a couple meaningful commitments here pretty soon. And two, that Indiana kind of needs to, because Indiana, I think it's fair to say, has built this window of like kind of back-to-back weekends to just sort of say, this is where we're going to bring in our first wave of big time top target players with six scholarships open, that they've got to get at least a couple three of these.
Did you say a couple three of these?
Couple three. Couple
Couple
two.
three.
Couple two tree. Couple two tree.
Well, so what's your set? Who's the guy? Who do they need first? I mean, isn't that how
Well,
that
I mean,
works?
I don't think it's, people have been putting in crystal balls and things. I don't think this is speaking out of school. There's a lot of noise around Miles Rice, who is Pac-12 freshman of the year. He's got an interesting story. It's actually his third year in college. He redshirted 1 year. Then he's, I believe this pauses your eligibility clock, if I'm not mistaken, because he had lymphoma. And then he came back this year and was, he ran the show for Washington State. They obviously made the tournament, kind of the surprise package out of the Pac-12. There's a lot of noise around him to Indiana, and also Kanan Carlisle, who was kind of a playmaking combo guard. He was all freshman team in the Pac-12 for Stanford last year. Both guys are actually originally from the Atlanta area, so I think there's some Yasir Roseman connections. I think those are the two that I've seen some crystal balls come through for, and that I've heard, like, again, that the smoke is thickening around Indiana, maybe adding those two, and that starts you off at least on the path to adding some meaningful depth in your backcourt, not just bodies, but guys that are going to come in and have a proven track record of impacting the game at a high major level.
Do you, and how much does that move the needle for Indiana in terms of the what they need for talent wise? I know you posted a big
I think,
guard. How does
if I'm
that?
not mistaken, both of those guys are like top 15 or top 20 in terms of overall on three sports ranking in the portal. I mean, they're probably, particularly given that those are guys that have both been kind of on Indiana's wish list since the beginning. I certainly at least think that Indiana would feel like it got two of its top targets, and then it's a question of, well, what do you make of that? How do you build around them? How much better do they get from the last year to next year and so forth? But I think Indiana would certainly consider those guys, two of its biggest sort of wants, if you want to say.
What's been your bit? I mean, was this, because I wasn't covering basketball last year. Is the portal, has this, was this the same way, or I mean, the volume last year?
There's probably more this year. I mean, like, I think Jeff Goodman had something that suggested we were trending toward like
2000 or something like that.
2000 kids in the portal. I don't think, I don't think that it was quite that way last year, but it was, I mean, the vibe was similar. There was a lot of movement. And I think what's happened here is just NIL money continues to kind of go up, and everybody kind of gets to a place where they're convinced, where someone convinces them they're going to get a paycheck. And that's just not always the case.
I mean, because there's just, I mean, and do you, in terms of like the top guys, are you surprised that Indiana hasn't gone after any names that you've seen go into the portal? I mean, was there like talent that you thought that they should go that they're not going after?
I don't know that anything's kind of come to mind. I mean, listen, if we sat here and combed through, I mean, everyone should go after this guy or that guy. Carlisle, I think there's been a longstanding interest in. Rice makes tons of sense if you want a point guard. I still think you need to add more proven shooting, but I've thought that for 8 years, and Indiana has not done it, at least not effectively. There's kind of this question about whether or not Indiana wants a starting five or just maybe some depth behind Malik Renu. And that might be a situation where it's a little bit of, if it's this guy, then you stick to more of the two big lineups and Renu plays the four. But if it's this guy, maybe he's more of a reserve that plays a lot of minutes, but Renu tries as the five, and you just see if you can make that work. I will say, like, it seems like, especially with Bryson Tucker in the fold, it seems like for the moment they're really more about kind of guard depth and a big. I think some of that guard depth needs to be proven shooting, whether it's someone like Connor Hickman, who's expected to visit this weekend. Obviously, Bloomington South alum, transferring from Bradley. He's got 1 year left. Or if it's, someone like, is it Ryan Conwell, the Pike alum, who was really good for Indiana State this past season, shot the ball really, really well. But you know, you also kind of wind up in a situation where if you start taking commits, then suddenly there's fewer minutes to go around, and guys say, well, actually, I can get a better opportunity somewhere else. So we'll see. I think Indiana needs guard depth, and I think it needs shooting depth. And I think it, you know, if you don't take a proven out and out shooter in this little wave, because I think what, you know, what makes a certain amount of sense to me is if Indiana can get two, three, maybe even like four commitments out of this window that, like I said, it's built for itself, then you almost kind of take a step back and say, okay, still got two or three scholarships to play with here. Maybe we don't need to go target guys that we need to play a high volume of minutes, but we need them to fill a certain role. So maybe that's when you go target, for example, a 3-point shooter or someone like that. But I just think that, you know, there is an extent to which you never want to panic in the portal. And I don't think Indiana has. I think if they were panicking, they would have taken some commitments by now. But you know, you do kind of need one to get the ball rolling. And it feels like, and it seems like Indiana may well get that soon. But until they do, you know, it's this all stays kind of perilously theoretical.
So, but this with Rice and Carlisle, if they got them, this would be more of an up and down team because they're not, those they don't shoot well. I mean, Carlisle didn't shoot 40% last year. And then you go, you're
Carlisle
small.
shot 32. Rice shot about 27. Rice had a stretch at the end of the regular season where he missed like 22 in a row. And basically the suggestion was that he just either was a little bit injured or a little bit tired, and that he's probably more like a 34, 35% 3-point shooter that just kind of hit a bad rut, basically. So I think they both could be decent shooters. I don't think you can look at either of them and just assume that freshman to sophomore year, they're going to go from where they were to 44%. So, I mean, that's where I say, like, I think it would be good for Indiana to go find somebody that you say, we'll do this with you on defense, and, you know, we'll put the ball in your hands these times. But like, the thing we need from you the most is when you're on the floor, you're not a liability at the defensive end and at the offensive end, you're stretching the floor and hitting shots.
But my question is like the makeup of the team. Do you think that this works? Like, I mean, do you like, I mean, because you got, you know, with what you're bringing back, do you think it would have been easier just to get a couple of like pure shooters and another big, which would have been an easy pitch based on the success you've had the last couple of years, versus trying to get these playmaking guards and sort of revamp the team?
I mean, I think you do need playmaking ability. I think you know, as good as Trey Galloway was, I think it sometimes felt like you were asking too much of him last season. Obviously, you lost Xavier Johnson, and you probably, I would argue, you weren't dynamic enough offensively to begin with. And so I think you do need the playmaking ability, particularly if you're going to run a pick and roll heavy style the way Mike Woodson kind of wants to. And I think that's where a player like Rice in particular makes a lot of sense. But you know, it's just kind of, I mean, this is simplistic, but just having watched Indiana struggle so much shooting the three, either for efficiency or volume, the last several years, there is an extent to which you just kind of are, you would understand anyone who's skeptical of the idea that like this time around you're going to go get the kids that you know, like it's like that arrested, is it arrested development where it's like, does this work for most people? No, but I think it could work
It's gonna
for
work for us,
us.
yeah.
Like it's sort of like, you know, this time around it'll be fine. It just feels like you could really stand to add, you know, I mean, like I think about when Indiana added Nick Zeisloft out of the portal in 2014, and Zeisloft became, you know, frankly, an even more important player for Indiana than we probably expected at that time. But the baseline with Zeisloft was he'll defend okay and he'll hit threes, he'll stretch the floor. Like I remember being on the foreign tour in Montreal, and after one of the games, Yogi Ferrell and hit Zeisloft for like three threes out of the corner. And somebody said, do you like the corner? You know, the corner three. He's like, yeah, I mean, I can kind of shoot it anywhere. And Yogi was like, man, you can just stay in the corner. I'll find you. Don't worry. And it's just, and you could just tell, like, after Indiana struggled so much to shoot three the year before, like Indiana, Yogi Ferrell, as Indiana's point guard, was just like, thank God. Like, I have someone that when they're open, when I create them the shot, it will go in. And it just feels like you could stand to have that sort of assurance, that sort of guarantee, while you look at a Miles Rice and say, can we get you from 27% to 34%? While you look at Kane and Carlisle and say, can we get you from 32% to 38%? While you look at Trey Galloway and say, hey, listen, there's still a good shooter in there. Can we get you from 25, 24, 25% last year to maybe back up to like 32%? McKenzie Mbako takes another step and on and on and on. I think it would be good to have one guy that's just like, hey, when he steps into the three, you feel good about it going in.
It'd be good, yes. That probably one guy. They need one desperate. You're leading the charge.
It also is one of those, and recruiting will always feel a little bit this way. I don't think the portal is really that different. It does feel a little bit like Indiana gets one, and maybe Indiana adds two or three kind of quickly. It's right now Indiana's got some pieces. It shouldn't be a hard sell that you're going to play next to a couple of McDonald's All-Americans. And a fifth year, creative lead guard and
I know,
third.
and I get what your point, but my curiosity is like, does any of that even matter?
I mean, I think NIL is part of it, obviously. I think you still have to
Like,
be
because are
able
these
to.
players essentially just waiting? Like, well, so you've seen just it continues. The names just keep going in the portal because there's more coaching changes. Are players just essentially just like, well, I'm gonna wait until I get the best offer, and then who cares how I fit in a roster if I'm
I
making
think there
X
still needs
amount
to
of
be
money?
some fit because I think,
I mean, it can't just be like the worst team ever, but like, I mean, but the teams competing for your services are probably going to have a need for you in some way, and sort of like the fit.
and then there will be like the NIL. I think it's just like recruiting in a high school. It's a little bit of all of it. And this piece might be more important to one, playing time might be more important to one guy. NIL might be more important to one guy. Role might be more important to one
Right,
guy.
but does NIL just sort of subsume, like, if you get to a
I
certain
think it's,
number?
I think it, I mean, I still love that old Mike Locksley line about how like players will get dressed in a trash can for
Yeah, but because I think
$25 or whatever.
I tend to agree, because like, you have not heard facilities, like, I mean, nothing, that the everything's changed. It just feels like, especially
But
with the
if you're
basketball.
recruiting a high-level portal target who's also got other high-major programs involved, then they're probably putting decent NIL money on the table too. Now, maybe you can just blow them out of the water with your
Right, but
bid.
if you blow, but if that's my point, is like, if you just increase your offer enough, there's a number that's going to be like, well, I don't care that your showers aren't the greatest, right?
Have you checked out the showers in Indiana?
No, I was just throwing out. I don't know. I
Okay.
don't tepid water flow. Yeah, I mean, that's that you can get past it.
I mean, I think NIL solves a lot of problems and answers a lot of questions. I just think if you're recruiting a high-level portal target who's also going to have other schools in that are going to be able to put, serious, like long-term financial security kind of money on the table, then there has to be more than just that. But I would say, and we'll, I guess, wrap up here. I do think, a lot of this momentum Indiana seems to be building, and they've got to get these kids over the line. So let's not give them too much credit too soon. A lot of the momentum they seem to be building, I do suspect, is reflective of a revamped kind of NIL, war chest or whatever term you want to use. Like I think that, a lot of the talk about Indiana having even more NIL money than a year ago for this cycle has probably proven true so far, but we'll see if they finish the job. We'll be back next week with another Mind Your Banners and maybe some commitments to talk about. We'll preview the spring game a little bit more in depth. For now, he's Mike Nislik. I'm Zach Osterman for the Bloomington Herald Times, the Indianapolis Star. This has been Mind Your Banners for April 12th, 2024. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you soon.